Welcome to Don't Talk to Strangers, a true crime podcast. We are your hosts, Hannah Elizabeth
and Kate Mitchell. This is a place where you can find true crime tales, morbid mysteries and all things spooky.
We are two scousers with a true crime and red wine passion. Expect wine reviews, a few howls and much more.
Our podcast does include graphic content and explicit language. Discretion is advised.
So grab a bevy, it's about to get heavy.
We're back, baby.
We're back. Oh, she's got the new hair. You got the new hair.
Upgraded. Well, not up, I say upgraded, but like I was just done like with the cowboy copper.
Yeah, I like trend. It.
I like it. I'm back to the dark side.
Long. Dark side.
And you've got your gorgeous red. I've said to Hannah, she needs to go this permanently, but...
I'm just grabbing for a little one night only, yeah. Babes.
And I feel like it could be a permanent thing.
Yeah, like doing different personas. Oh my God, we have both had...
Sorry, yeah.
Like the lack of... You know, true crime and red wine. And
you go first, red wine. And then I'll explain my answer.
Oh, fuming. Yeah, we're literally fuming. Basically, was in London this morning. I had meetings, missed me train. Everything's gone wrong. Like, literally, I've snapped my nail right down there. I'm in agony. Like, literally can't do anything. Everything went wrong. You know, just like the big snowball effect was stuck. Then I was stuck in traffic, ran out of petty, like... Just one thing after another. Like, I just can't wait to get in bed, turn my phone off.
Yeah, I need to eat.
I'm going to eat mac and cheese on a tray with legs. I don't even care. Like, that's a slob in bed. I don't care. And watch The Jungle and turn my phone off.
Good.
And yeah. Start again tomorrow.
Well, my day was fine. And then leaving the office to then... The blankets that we use, Hannah's dad, I think, we think, because he's a legend, has tidied everything away and put them in the loft, we think.
With the Halloween decor.
So I was like, right, I'll go to Asda. Runs into Asda, get the, it was the last two as well, by the way, so it was made up.
Oh my God, you know when I got them the first time, it was the last two?
That's good, that stuff on our side. So then I was like, wine. So I go to the wine aisle, get chicken wine. Now, if you know, you know. Right?
If you know, it's all about the chicken wine.
I got the red version because I don't think we've had that.
We normally have the blush rosé, but there's something about it, right? It gets you rotten.
I think rosé wine is dangerous.
But the
general.
Chicken is lethal. Like, if I have a bottle of chicken, and it's quite like little, isn't it?
Yeah.
If I have a bottle of chicken, I'm a goner, but it's fit. But
I thought I'll buy the red chicken and we can have this conversation.
My mate raves about it, Mikey. He says it's the red. Nice, yeah.
£9. So that was going to be our review.
We were this close.
Didn't have ID. Get ID. Now, to be fair, is a compliment. Like, I was just looking at him
and
I was like...
Yeah, but it's human when you're in a rush and you're like, oh,
I was like, I needed to get here. And I was just like, oh, fuck's sake, mate. So then I was like, not a problem. Left Asda, got the blankets, and I was like, I've not eaten all day. So I went, I'll go to the Mackey's drive-thru and just get a double cheeseburger and eat it while I'm driving. Get to the till, pays for it, and they go, you're going to have to park.
And were you, like, jammed in, like, you couldn't get out then? You're, like, in
well,
the
queue? Well, I had to go in the main car park. Because the three car parking spaces.
Cheeseburger.
So I was like, and I just looked at her and I went, not, like, went for the cheeseburger and she was like, yeah, sorry. So I was like, fine.
Doesn't even fill a gap in
wasted 15 minutes. And it was like a stamped bat. It was like, they put
like
it together.
A stamped
and done that with it, right?
What's a stamped bat?
Like, imagine a bat on the floor and you stamp on it. And it was all mushy. That's what it was like. So that wound me up. Then I had to drive to the co-op to get the wine. They didn't have the red chicken wine. Oh, did they? Is that what I picked up? I didn't buy the red chicken wine, I bought something else. Gets to Hannah's.
Well, you must have done because it was the chicken bottle.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
So I got the chicken wine again. So another, like, you know, got there, gets to Hannah's, front door, drops it.
At the front door. So I've opened the door and she's got a face on, like.
And Hannah's like, hey, babe.
And it's all over the floor.
Yeah. So, what sorry to your resin
you know
driveway.
I've been KB'd as well, and for real, and I'm like, I don't know how, because I'm
like,
haggard,
don't get
like,
me wrong.
I'm confused.
Internally, I'm like, just...
No, I'm
but
haggard.
But at the same
I'm
time,
like,
it's like, mate, I am clearly not 18. But anyway.
Jobs, mate.
So Hannah's, pardon me, Hannah's on the T, I'm on the DC.
Yeah.
And gone. ASMR. Oh, yeah.
What's that like?
Weird,
isn't it? Yeah, so no red wine today, but I think it's quite good because I've been drinking loads. been out loads of events and that. So yeah, no red wine, just mac and cheese and tea.
Yeah, so we're all up the wall, but we're here and we've finally done it. We're recording here again, episode 4.
Do you think that bit of blanket needs to go over the green bit?
But I can't move. So if you can see bits of green or bits of orange. Can we just
talk about this quickly as well?
I hate like, it. Hate me seat, like.
Right, we want to get, well, I'm going to get for this room anyway, like a little couch or something. This is a nightmare. So they're like the bean bags. So we actually had these exact beanbags in Love Island, and I'm not joking. When you sit on these beanbags, you cannot get off them, can you?
No. In theory, it's a great idea to sit on beanbags and like but record.
I didn't but think it's that comfy.
They're not. And when I'm on the camera, you 10 ton text like that. Like, no. If you know, if people who know me know that I'm in hell right now.
And you can't move off the friggin' beanbag.
No. But we are back doing what we love.
I hope this is hiding my, like, haggard neck.
Oh, sure.
Because when I watched it the other week, well, I seen the clip, my neck was Deirdre.
Deirdre Rallo.
I need it. Like, right, so what were we doing?
Sorry, so, we are, my laptop's frozen, hang on. We are doing Ed Kemper.
Oh, okay.
The co-ed killer.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow. So, he is an absolute one.
I know, and it's a longie. So, should we get right into it?
Let's get right into it, hon.
So, grab a bevy.
It's about to get heavy.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Right. Okay, so.
Oh, my God, the Ed. I'm sorry. The Ed.
I know.
Sometimes I get Ed Gein and Ed Kemper. I get the stories mixed up because they're both Eds.
You'll know he's the one who hates but loves as well. Oh, they both did. They both, like, love
the
man.
The coward killer, the one where he sat them up?
No, that we did that in the last...
I get them mixed up.
That's right, the Gainesville Ripper.
Oh, okay.
We will redo the Gainesville Ripper.
That was
I loved the Gainesville Ripper.
Yeah, anyway, that was a madness. Go on.
So, Edmund Kemper. So, Edmund Emile Kemper III.
Oh, okay.
Often referred to as the co-ed killer, is one of America's most infamous serial killers.
Yeah, wow.
I need to change that intro because they're all America's most infamous serial killers. But yeah, that's what they say online. Anyway, responsible for the murders of 10 people.
God.
Including his grandparents, his mother, and several young women.
Sorry, I know what one this is.
I knew you would.
Oh my God.
I knew you would.
Brace yourself. Brace yourself.
This has happened between 1964 and 1973. Kemper's brutal and calculated killings combined with his remarkable intelligence and cooperation with the law after his capture made him a central figure in criminology and psychology studies. I'm going to refer to him as either Ed, Edmund or Kemper, by the way, because I can't remember. When I write these notes, I change it up, sorry. So, just so you know.
Edmund, okay.
Let's go. Edmund Kemper was born on December 18th, 1948, which made him a Sagittarius.
Oh, a Saggy.
So I don't... Are they good? I mean...
I've had an ex who was a sad G.
Oh, really? Well...
Did you hear that?
Car went past.
I thought it was like a big train.
He was overcompensating for something.
Yes, sad G. Hmm.
Well, he was born in Burbank, California. His childhood was troubled, marked by family dysfunction and emotional neglect. His parent, Edmund Kemper II and Clarnell Stanberg, had a deeply strained relationship. Clarnell was reportedly a domineering and emotionally abusive woman, particularly towards his son. She belittled him constantly, often calling him stupid and worthless. Can we have phones on silent, please?
Hello, sorry, is that yours or mine?
I mean, it shouldn't be mine.
I don't know where mine is. I can't reach it and then I can't move.
Oh, look at the green.
I can't move off the chair. Yeah, don't move.
It's fine if we hear the phone.
Sorry.
We hear the phone.
Oh, fuck.
Where was I? She was a domineering and emotionally abusive woman, particularly towards her son. She called him stupid and worthless. Kemper's father was a World War II veteran, and he abandoned the family when Kemper was 9, leading to even more toxic environment at home.
Oh, and then he was left with her then?
I know. And after, obviously he divorced her. After the divorce, Kemper was sent to live...
Could you be like that to your son?
With his, well, I know. Well, he was now obviously living with his mother and his two sisters, Helena and Montana. Clarnell showed little affection towards him and forced him to live in the basement out of fear that he might harm his sisters. The isolation combined with his mother's verbal abuse caused deep emotional scars that would later manifest in Kemper's violent tendencies.
Yeah, yeah.
Kemper began to harbour deep resentment towards his mother and hatred that would ultimately drive him to his most notorious crimes.
What, like he'd become a bit obsessed with...
Oh yeah, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Even as a child, Kemper displayed disturbing behaviours. He tortured and killed animals.
Oh, it's always, you know, it always starts, well, not always, but that very is often, a big sign, yeah, isn't it?
An early sign of psychopathy. He also engaged in highly inappropriate sexual fantasies, often imagining acts of violence against women, developed a fascination with death. By the time he was a teenager, Kemper's dark fascination turned into the desire to kill, particularly those he had felt had wronged him. The early signs of violence, I just went into a little bit, was animal cruelty, trigger warning.
Like, I'm sorry, but if you can hear, a little animal, yeah, you're an absolute psycho.
He killed his family pets on multiple occasions.
What?
At 10 years old, he buried a cat alive. Later digging it up and decapitating it and mounting its head on a spike.
No.
He killed another cat with a knife, claiming it favoured his sister over him. So he was getting jealous.
Over the cat?
Of the cat, yeah.
Whoa.
He then developed a fantasy life.
Red flags.
All day. He developed an early fascination with violence and power. By the age of 8, he was imagining brutal scenarios where he murdered people. His fantasies often revolved around killing women, reflecting his hatred of his mother, which I've mentioned a little bit. He also played macabre games.
What's macabre?
Macabre is just another word for like gore, morbid. Like, yeah. You've got a fascination in the macabre.
Gory.
We have a fascination in the macabre.
Yeah.
Kemper would force his sisters to play games such as gas chamber or execution. What? I'm laughing because it's not funny. But
what do you have to do in the gas chamber?
He just acted out his own deaths, but like made his sisters do it. Like, it's quite bizarre, but...
Robert.
At school, Kemper was withdrawn, shy and awkward. He struggled to fit in due to his size. He was already over 6 feet tall by his early teens and had a dark, unsettling personality.
Oh, so
he was pure big tall. Fucker. Yeah.
Oh, but normally that's like a good thing.
I know.
Being well, dead tall.
No, but his height didn't really matter because... the child of hail. No, I'm crying. He was like 9 foot.
His feet were sticking out the end of the house.
Oh, yeah. I'm crying. Sorry, I've lost my place now. I love when you come up with these random things. He's like the child of hail.
Anyway. Oh, I didn't say it like that.
So, at the age of 15,
yeah,
after an argument with his mother, Kemper was sent to live with his paternal grandparents, mm-hmm, Edmund Sr. and Maud Kemper, on their farm in Norfolk. Well, it's North Fork. California. I read it as Norfolk.
Yeah,
but that's North Fork, California. Okay. This relocation did little to improve his mental state, yeah, as he felt equally isolated and resentful living with his grandparents. His grandmother Maud was strict and critical, reminding him of his mother, and their relationship quickly soared and escalated into a downward spiral. On August 27th, 1964.
Your birthday?
Well, not the year.
I was gonna say he's not your birthday.
No. Mine's Egeen.
Okay.
Egeen's okay. My birthday one. We're just that self-absorbed. Every time there's our date, we're like, my birthday. In 1964, Kemper's rage boiled over. During an argument with his grandmother, he retrieved a .22 caliber rifle that his grandfather had given him for hunting. He shot his grandmother in the head, then repeatedly stabbed her after she was dead. When his grandfather returned home from running errands, Kemper shot him as well.
He stated
his reasoning for killing his grandfather was to spare him the trauma of seeing his wife's body.
Yeah.
I mean, what a favour, but don't kill someone.
Yeah.
Just say don't come in. Or
I mean...
Don't do it.
Yeah, I kind of pretty much thought he's going to do the granddad here because he's going to see
it's
this
in his
now.
Nature.
It's definitely in the nature. After we started now.
Oh, yeah. After the murders, Kemper then called his mother, who advised him to contact the police.
What, he told her?
Yeah, he said, look, hello.
He's, hello, no, he, mum. You've got to remember, he is 15
at this stage. After the mother, sorry, after the murders, Kemper called his mother, who told him to call the police, which he did. When officers arrived, Kemper calmly confessed to the killings.
Yeah.
During questioning, he stated that he killed his grandmother to see what it felt like.
Sorry, I'm just, I keep putting in, but I'm just already thinking, how's he going on to do the rest? If he's rang them and said, hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I've done a murder.
Kill me, Nan. And,
well, I know. He didn't, shall we, to see what it felt like.
Oh.
And his grandfather, because he didn't want him to find out, as I mentioned. Due to his age, Kemper was declared criminally insane and sent to a state hospital, a maximum security facility for mentally ill offenders.
Mm.
Right? Now, while at hospital, Kemper was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia.
Oh, God.
Through this diagnosis, though this diagnosis would later be challenged, he underwent extensive psychiatric
He
underwent an extensive psychiatric evaluation and was considered highly intelligent with an IQ of 145. Kemper quickly became a model inmate, displaying a cooperative attitude and helping staff with various tasks, including administering psychiatric tests to help other inmates. His deep understanding of psychology allowed him to manipulate his evaluators into believing he had been rehabilitated.
Oh, hey. Where's this come from?
Because he's a clever bastard.
Yeah, but well, he didn't really know that.
No, but it'll ring a bell when you remember on Mindhunter, I got to mention that. And he's like, well, my theory is. He's like, how big dope.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, clever. Anyway.
Yeah.
At the age of 21, after serving 5 years, Kemper was released from hospital in 1969.
No way.
Despite the warnings from some psychiatrists who believed he was still dangerous. The California Youth Authority paroled him into the care of his mother, who had moved now to Santa Cruz, California.
All right.
His mother, now working as an administrative assistant in the University of California, Santa Cruz, continued to verbally abuse him, exacerbating his feelings of anger and resentment.
And what, she was just kind of like, oh yeah, you killed the nan and granddad.
It weren't her mum and dad, though. It was the paternal. So, yeah, but still, it's not the point. It's not the point. It's not like she's like, oh, well, it weren't mine. But, yeah.
I know, but it's just a bit, like, wild, isn't it?
I know.
Okay.
After his release, Kemper struggled to integrate back into society. He attended community college and held a variety of jobs, including working for the California Department of Transportation. However, his relationship with his mother continued to deteriorate, fueling his violent urges that he had kept dormant during his time at hospital. Because you've got to remember, he's like faking it.
Yeah.
So he's faking it. Yeah. And he got out and he's like, keep them in.
You know, it is the Mars fault, really, this one, because...
Well, in 1972, these urges erupted into a brutal killing spree that would claim the lives of six young women and eventually his mother and her best friend.
I won the bestie.
Mary Ann Peace and Anita Lucchesa were the first known victims of Kemper after his release from the psychiatric hospital. On May 7th, 1972, the two 18-year-old college students were hitchhiking in Berkeley, California.
Don't do that.
Kemper posed as a friendly driver, offering them a ride, claiming he was heading in their direction.
Yeah.
Now, there's a few things in life that are like facts.
Yeah.
Death, taxes, and if you go hitchhiking, you're going to
die. Oh, yeah, you're going to die.
Do you know
die.
What I mean?
Well, I just don't know why anyone...
But then it was normal. He's
terrifying looking, isn't he?
He's ginormous, but...
And he's... I think I can, like, remember what he looks like.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this. I hope I do. Someone found that was, like, comforting because he was like a big, lovable giant. He wasn't,
really?
Like... Really? Well, I might have just read that, but I'll see.
I don't know why you'd get in, like, a fella's car like that.
No, I know. Don't hitchhike, guys.
No, defo not.
Get Uber.
Uber.
Once they were in his car, Kemper drove them to a secluded area from their intended destination. In that remote... In that remote location, he attacked them with a knife, stabbing and strangling both young women to death. This was the beginning of his pattern of killing young women and dismembering their bodies. Kemper took their corpses to his apartment where he dismembered them. He later disposed of their remains in various places. only part of Marianne's body were found by authorities.
What do you mean he was taking them to his house?
He took them to his house to like chop them up and then was dumping them. Yeah. And they only found part of Marianne's body. And Aunt Anita, which whose surname was Lucchese, who was mentioned before, she was never recovered.
Oh.
I know. Aiko Ku, a 15-year-old high school student and aspiring dancer, was hitchhiking to a dance class in Berkeley on September the 14th, 1972, when she encountered Kemper. She accepted his offer for a ride, trusting the 6'9" man. 6'9".
No, that makes it worse.
Because of his appearance and demeanour, and he did not appear dangerous. That's what I mean. I think if he was like, hello, nice to meet you.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be like, oh, what's he going to do? Child of hell.
Oh, like, you reckon he like, acts as on
yeah,
him?
Yeah, I think he was being all like, hi, oh, I'm just driving this way. Like, he's not no, he's not good looking. He's not, like, got a cockiness about him. He's just like... Yeah, a bit gimpy. Gimpy's not probably the right word.
A bit soft, yeah. Yeah.
Clear. Well, yeah.
Well, no, he wasn't actually, was he?
No. After driving for some time, Kemper took her to a... Is that on?
It's not even giving that on.
Kemper drove her to a desolate area. He tricked her into crawling into the back seat under the guise of fixing a stuck seatbelt. Once vulnerable, he strangled her to death. After killing Ku, Kemper drove her body back to his apartment. There he engaged in necrophilia with her corpse before dismembering her, further showcasing the gruesome nature of his killings. Like the previous victims, he disposed of her remains, scattering part of her body in various locations to evade discovery by law enforcement. Sorry, this is making me pure baby.
I need to, like, put my hand over there. I look like a weirdo, but it's freezing.
Pardon me. Oh. Okay. On January the 8th, 1973, Kemper picked up Cindy Shawl.
Ooh, Cindy.
Fab name, that.
Cute, yeah.
A 19-year-old student at Cabrillo College. She was also hitchhiking near Santa Cruz. Kemper had refined his methods by... those who can't see, I just said methods with a f. Refined his methods by this point, and instead of using a knife, he shot her in the head with a .22 caliber pistol to quickly incapacitate her. He then brought her body to his mother's house where he lived and kept her corpse hidden in his room overnight. The next day, while his mother was at work, Kemper meticulously dismembered Shaw's body in the bathtub. He had done this with his previous victims. However, what set Shaw's case apart was what Kemper did with her head.
Wait there, the mum is at work?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm forgetting that he lives at home with his mum.
Yeah. So all this time...
How did he, like, just get away with this?
No, I know.
Is she just, like, away with the fairies?
Yeah, but Jeff did it with his nan, remember?
I know. But...
And she was going, there's smelly bin bags. Like, I'm sorry. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're just mad. You wouldn't get away with nothing these days, let me tell you. Especially with my ma, she'd be like...
I know, what's that smell?
And, like, if you think about, like, you know, if you dye your hair or, like, at the minute I'm using blue shampoo to get, like...
Yeah,
you know,
it's all in the shower.
It gets everywhere. Or, like, wash and tan off. Ladies. I mean, I don't know if there's any many, but...
And gentlemen.
When you wash and tan off, it goes everywhere. So when you... Blood. And you've got to rinse it off.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a massive job, that.
But just let me start that again. What set Shaw's case apart was what he did with her head.
Mm.
He buried it in his mother's garden, positioning it so that the face faced his mum's bedroom window. So she was like...
No, he is not all right, you know? He is not well, is he?
Not well at all. In his later confessions, Kemper revealed that this act was symbolic of his deep-seated hatred and rage towards his mother, who he blamed for many of his personal and psychological issues.
She was an absolute cow, wasn't she, the mum?
Kemper described this gesture as a way of symbolically taunting his mother.
Like, ha, I'm lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Exercising power and control even in her absence. The thing is, though, the mum was a fucker, but, like...
Yeah, obviously.
But... As far as we are aware, there was no physical or sexual or violence.
Yeah, she was just horrible.
But emotional abuse is as equally as bad. It is, it's so damaging.
Like, made him feel...
It's so damaging, but...
Unloved by his mum.
But I think, again, this is the perfect... He was born unwell.
Yeah.
And then she's exacerbated it too.
Yeah. It's not out there.
She was an asshole.
And yeah, she didn't feel loved.
I know. On the night of February the 5th, 1973, Kemper picked up two University of California Santa Cruz students, Rosalind Thorpe and Alice Liu.
They've all got nice names.
I know. Back in the day, like, people had nice names.
They did. Hey, I know where this story's going and it's proper fucked, isn't it?
I mean, kind of, but yeah, they're all fucked, but...
No, like, I'm...
A little bit.
Yeah, I think it is. This one.
They were hitchhiking. Unlike his earlier victims, who he had killed outside of his vehicle, Kemper shot both of the women while he was still in the car. The close-range headshot instantly incapacitated them, allowing Kemper to avoid struggle. So he's obviously... Remember I said before, he's like, I used to stab and strangle, and then he was like, I need to shoot them. Yeah. But when they're outside, there is a film on this, and it's awful, and I will try and find it. And, like, when they're trying to get away, and it's heavy.
Well, it's a shocking...
It's like, awful. It's, like, one of
like
those...
Like a shit film.
It's shit, but it's awful as well, like, to watch. Cause, like,
really?
Like, you're like, ugh, yeah.
I thought you meant, like, it's pure, yeah, like, corny.
It is, but it's also, like, when you put yourself in their position, and, like, trying to get away, and, like, they're looking at each other, and he's, like... Anyway.
Yeah, he...
Anyway, he incapacitated them, allowing them to avoid a struggle. After the murders, Kemper drove their bodies back to his mother's house again, mm-hmm. hiding them in the car. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm Burpy McBurperson from that Diet Coke. Apologies. Hiding them in his car before sneaking them inside later that night. He then decapitated and dismembered both women, continuing his practice of mutilating his victims post-mortem. He disposed of their remains by scattering them around different parts of Santa Cruz, and parts of their bodies were later discovered by hikers. The brutality and efficient execution of these murders demonstrated Kemper's growing confidence and skill as a serial killer.
Because he's, like, getting kind of, like, he thinks he's getting better at what he's up to. So, you know, these mums, they mustn't, like, ever go in their room, must they? My mum always, like, was, like, in and out my room. They mustn't go in
their
room.
No, but I think that's a family thing, like... My mum and dad wouldn't go in my room, really.
Wouldn't
like,
they?
My mum would go in to put, like, washing on the bed.
Yeah, that's what
but,
I mean.
But she wouldn't, like, go rooting or, like, yeah, she like wouldn't be opening my wardrobes
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, she'd put something in or, like...
Yeah. I mean, we haven't really had to hide heads and dead bodies and stuff, to be honest. So...
I know, but it just baffles me.
Now, Kemper's final victims were far more personal. His own mother, Clarnell Strandberg, and her best friend. For years, Kemper harboured deep resentment, as we've mentioned, towards his mother, whom he described as controlling, belittling, and emotionally abusive. On April the 20th, 1973, this rage reached its peak. After coming home from a party, Clarnell was sitting in bed reading when Kemper entered her room. Without warning or saying a word, he bludgeoned her with a hammer and slit her throat.
Oh my God.
After killing his mother, Kemper had further mutilated her body, decapitating her and removing her vocal cords. He placed her... Because obviously you've got to remember...
Yeah, she was always...
The verbal... Yeah.
Abuse. That's heavy, that's pure deep set, that, isn't it?
Heavy. He removed her vocal cords.
He's been thinking about pulling them off for years. Oh, like,
he will have fascinated about that, being like, I will get them.
One day... You shut up.
You mark my words.
Ah.
He placed her severed head on a shelf and and spent hours upon hours screaming at it.
Oh my God.
Sorry,
Pete.
That just makes me laugh because,
like...
it's like, obviously that's awful. And like, for him to hate someone that much while he's gone. But it's just the picture of him being like, screaming at it for hours and hours and hours and hours.
Isn't it?
He was venting his anger that had built up over the years.
No, wait, as well. Sorry, warning, trigger, everyone.
I mean, the whole thing's a trigger warning.
This is what I was, you know, when I said earlier and I was like, babe, I was like, this gets really fucked up. And you were like, eh.
Well, no, it is. It's the whole thing's
no,
fucked
I
up.
No, I know, but no, right. I am sure, because it always sticks in my head, that it's either him or Ed Gein, because he had the hatred.
Ed Gein didn't kill
his
mum.
He loved
his
mum, didn't
he?
Yeah, he
didn't kill her. She just died.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, because it's always stuck in my head, that he cut her head off and he raped, like...
Well, it wouldn't shock neck. Me.
Or the head. Or
it wouldn't shock me because he's already shagged the bodies of the girls.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he shagged his mum's head. And he put it on a...
Yeah, he placed it on a severed head.
Oh, severed.
Right. Severed head on a shelf. Threw darts at it. And what? Spent hours and hours and hours screaming at it.
Honestly, that always sticks in my head like that is a madness, isn't it? That's why I was like, hey, this gets bad fucked up. And I'm sure this might be wrong, this might be something I read, but I thought he put it on a spike and put it somewhere like the cat.
No, on the shelf.
No, I'm on the shelf.
Just on the shelf. You did that with the cat, but...
Not the
This one's on a shelf.
Wow. Like, that has always stuck in my head. Like, that's mad, isn't it? It's
No, awful.
Power. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, think about how many times he's fantasized about doing that.
And he thinks he's took, like, a complete power back over it. Wow. Sicko.
After this disturbing act, he hid his mutilated body in the closet. Later that day, Kemper invited his mother's best friend, Sally Hallett, to the house. Weird. Presumably to prevent her from discovering the gruesome scene. When Hallett arrived, Kemper strangled her to death. He stored her body in the closet, along with his mother's remains, before fleeing the area. After murdering his mother and Hallett, Kemper fled to Pueblo, Colorado, driving non-stop for 18 hours. Once there, he expected to be the subject of a massive manhunt, but after hearing nothing on the news about his crimes, Kemper decided to turn himself in. On April 23rd, 1973, he called the Santa Cruz police from a phone booth, confessing to the murders of his mother, Hallett, and the six other women. Initially, the police thought it was a prank call, as Kemper had been friendly with local enforcement officers and often socialised with them at the local bar. After he persisted, however, they realised the confession was real and Kemper was arrested without incident. During his trial, so this is a bit more like trial and aftermath. During his trial, Edmund Kemper's cooperation of the authorities and his detailed confession left little room for doubt in about his guilt. Psychiatrists who examined him found that he had severe personality disorder, characterised by antisocial behaviour, paranoid traits and an extreme hostility towards women. Yeah. Particularly his mother. However, despite his profound mental health issues, he was deemed legally sane and capable of standing trial.
Yeah.
Kemper's intelligence also played a significant role in his trial. With an IQ I mentioned before of 145, he understood the legal process and even expressed remorse for his actions, though it was mixed in with chilling detachment as he recounted the murders.
Mm.
Kemper pled not guilty by reason of insanity, but his detailed descriptions of the murders, coupled with his cold and methodical approach, led the court to reject his defence. During the trial, Kemper revealed that much of his rage and homicidal impulses were directed at his mother, whom he described as emotionally abusive, domineering throughout his whole life. He claimed that killing her was the accumulation of years of pent-up anger and hatred, and he acknowledged that the other murders were essentially practice for the final act of killing his mother.
So he was always wanting to do that.
I know, but...
He was building up to it.
You'd already killed your nan and granddad.
Oh, yeah, true.
Like, what like much... I mean, you shouldn't be killing anyone, but if you're going to practice it, you've done it twice.
Yeah.
You don't need to kill six other women.
It's like he was...
I think that's bullshit. He just wanted to kill people because you weren't well.
Yeah.
On November 8th, 1973, after a three-week trial, Kemper was found guilty of 8 counts of first-degree murder. Though his defence argued for insanity verdict, the jury rejected it, largely due to his clear understanding and the nature of his crimes. Following his conviction, Kemper was sent to the California Medical Facility in Vacaville. I'm saying that wrong, I know I am. Where he remains to this day.
Oh, shut up.
I love that when you get shocked that they're alive. I get all excited.
Let's
write to him.
How old would he be then?
I can't remember what years he... No, he was born in the 60s, 70s, no?
Oh, I can't make that out.
I don't want to lose me space. I'll go... remind me at the end and I'll find... I can't remember.
Ew.
Sorry, I've lost your face.
I feel like, but yeah, many remains to this go day. And, like, do one of them chats with them?
No, they fully have. Like, he's the one that, like, speaks openly and will go, yeah, I'll do interviews.
Don't think I've seen, like, a doctor. I've read about him, but I don't think I've seen, like, you know, I might have seen a documentary about him, but I haven't seen him. Love that when you see their, what the hell? When you see them
saying it, yeah. Remarkably, Kemper adapted to his prison life, much like he had adapted to his life in the psychiatric hospital. He became a model prisoner once again, using his intelligence and cooperative nature to integrate himself within the prison staff. Over the years, he has taken on various roles, including working as a prison librarian and helping to transcribe books into Braille for visually impaired individuals, and participating in interviews with psychologists and law enforcement to provide insight into the mind of a serial killer.
No. Yeah. Kemper's almost as if when he's, like, in these, he, like, likes it.
He loves it.
When he was in his, you know, his thingy hospital as well, he was, yeah, like, the model.
Dead helpful.
Yeah.
I mean,
wasn't very helpful when he wasn't in there, was he?
And it wasn't helpful to hitchhikers, let me tell you. Kemper's willingness to talk about his crimes and his psychological state has made him a valuable resource for criminologists, forensic psychologists, and even the FBI. His interviews have been instrumental in understanding the psyche of violent offenders.
Oh, wow.
And he has been unusually candid about his motivations, mental state, and methods. Kemper has expressed regret for his actions, though his calm and methodical way of describing the murders often contradicts genuine emotion. Because if you have remorse, you wouldn't be going, yeah, and then I got a vocal cord.
Yeah.
Put in the garbage. Plug. Exactly.
Yeah.
He has stated that he wishes he could have received the death penalty, as he believes he would have been a more fitting punishment for his crimes. Uh-huh. As I've mentioned, he's left a significant legacy in the fields of criminology and psychology. His extraordinary intelligence, willingness to cooperate, and his detailed confessions have provided researchers with a rare glimpse into the mind of a serial killer. Kemper's case, along with others like Ted Bundy and John Wayne Gacy, helped shape the FBI's development of its criminal profiling techniques, mm-hmm. particularly in understanding the motivations and methods of a serial killer.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Now, I've mentioned his calm all the time, so his calm demeanor has also been the subject of numerous documentaries, books, and television shows. He's been featured in true crime series such as Mindhunter, where his character is depicted during interviews with FBI as they work to develop the psychological profile of serial killers. Mm-hmm. His ability to articulate his thoughts and describe his crimes have made him a subject of morbid fascination in popular culture.
Can't believe he's still going, him.
His case has led to a deeper understanding of how childhood abuse, neglect, and toxic mm-hmm. parental relationships can impact the development of violent behaviour in some individuals.
Definitely.
Kemper's case also sparked debate about the treatment of violent offenders with severe mental health issues. His initial diagnosis of paranoid schizophrenia was later disputed, and many experts now believe that Kemper suffers from a combination, which I mentioned before, of personality disorders, including antisocial personality disorders, a narcissistic personality disorder. While he was considered legally sane, his psychological state remains a topic of discussion among experts who study the intersection of mental illness and criminal behaviour. Kemper has been eligible for parole multiple times, but he has consistently waived his right to a hearing.
Oh, really?
Stating that he does not deserve to be released. He has told interviewers that he understands the enormity of his crimes and believes he should remain incarcerated for the rest of his life. His lack of desire for freedom, coupled with his cooperation for authorities, has only deepened the public's fascination with this case. Because that is mad.
That he doesn't...
I mean, I doubt the parole board would ever let him out, be
God,
honest.
No, surely but not.
Mad. Like, he's got...
That he doesn't want it. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's almost like... You know, he's
contradicting.
Comfortable, and maybe he feels that he doesn't trust himself.
Yeah, 100%.
If he goes out there.
Ed Kemper's case continues to be studied as a prime example of the development of violent tendencies in individuals who suffer from emotional trauma, neglect, and abuse. His high intelligence and willingness to reflect on his actions have provided psychological insights. Now, conclusion. Ed Kemper remains one of the most notorious and disturbing serial killers in American history. His brutal crimes, combined with his high intelligence and willingness to cooperate with law enforcement, have made him a key figure in the study of criminal behaviour. The relationship with his mother, the abuse he suffered, and his manipulation of psychiatric evaluations highlighted the complexities of his case, raising the important questions about the nature of violence, mental illness, and the capacity for rehabilitation in individuals who commit extreme acts of brutality. Kemper's story serves as a chilling reminder of how childhood trauma, psychological disorders, and unchecked violent tendencies can culminate in acts of unimaginable horror. His legacy continues to shape our understanding of serial killers, and this case will likely remain a focal point in discussion about criminal psychology, the justice system, and the treatment of violent offenders for years to come.
Yeah, it's mad. I mean, I do feel sorry for him when he was a kid. Mm. I do.
And that is why.
We don't talk to strangers.
Or hitchhike.
No, defo not. Yeah, I do feel dead sorry for him when he's
no,
a
but
kid.
I said this last week. It's you're allowed to feel sorry.
Yeah.
It wasn't last week, it was the Eileen one. You can feel sorry for like the young them and what they went through, but I think he knew exactly. Like, yes, he's mentally unwell, but he's contradicted so many. Like, you
clever.
Can be mentally unwell and not in your body and not know what you're doing. You don't then deserve to be put in the same box as him. If that makes sense.
Yeah, he knew.
He knew exactly what he was
100%.
Doing. He's gone, don't let me out there, my
mate.
He's also being able to
and
manipulate.
He's and the fact that he's helping them now is mad, isn't it? Like,
it's sick.
He's pure clever and he's sitting down and, pure...
Yeah.
Giving them the insights.
I know. But...
Yeah, it's a madness. It's definitely come from the mum, though.
Yeah, no.
The hate for
And it
the
just
mum.
Shows that people think that emotional abuse or verbal abuse isn't as bad, but it can be so much worse as well.
Yeah,
like, especially at a young age, like, neglect is detrimental to the human psyche, as well as obviously not downplaying sexual and physical and all that, obviously not, but emotional and verbal is like equally as bad.
Oh my God, 100%. I mean, I really don't like the mum, but you know, he was obviously a pure freak, but
yeah, our Ed, 6'9", when was he born?
He was a Sanchi.
1948, so he'll be about 70 something. I can't do the maths.
Oh God, no. Oh, I just can't get over it. I thought...
No, he may be more. I'm nearly 80.
I'm going to have to YouTube. I'm like talking.
There's a film and there's a where he gets them and like where he gets, I think it's the first two is, and it's awful because like they kind of get away and then he kind of gets
what's
them. And
the co-eds then?
Co-ed is what you're called when you're a college student.
College, okay,
yeah.
That's why at first I thought you meant the one who...
Gainesville, No.
Okay.
But we were... Like, honestly, I know we've said this before, but basically, we did some really good cases
season one. There's actually some really good ones.
So we will redo them.
Like the Scream one.
Oh, yeah.
That is such a good one.
And then we did like a stalking one.
And
we
I feel like a survival story. Yeah. Like and there's a local one.
Oh, yeah. What was his name? Brian Blackwell.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Brian. So, yeah, so we will redo them 100%. At some point. Because they were really, really good.
But
if you listen back, it's shit, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why you don't talk to strangers. Well,
that was a nice bedtime story.
I know. I feel like I flew through that. Sorry if I'm speaking too quick. Like every time.
You forget to slow down.
I know. And that stutter. And I'm like, and I think, slow the fuck down.
Oh, well, that was a nice bedtime story, and now I can have me mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get out of bed. Pick the dogs up. And then I won't cook. I might not eat. If I just sleep. No, but if I sleep, I'll just wake up.
Are you joking? No starving?
But I did have a chocolate cheeseburger.
So, that's like a snack.
Anyway, but if you are interested in following us and finding out more information about our podcast,
yay,
please follow us on at Don't Talk to Strangers Podcast. You can email us at don'ttalktostrangerspod@gmail.com. You can listen anywhere you get your podcast, and obviously we're now on YouTube. Yeah, I think that's everything.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, so
thanks for listening and watching.
Yeah. I was gonna say see you next week, but it's not next week. It's every other week. If no one's got onto the pattern yet, it's every other week, every other Sunday. But then let's see if we stick to it. But
yeah,
we are being.
Oh, we will. No, we are.
Being strong.
Yeah, don't say that because we are.
Okay, yeah, sorry. But yeah, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye.